To sort of maybe state the obvious, as human beings, we all want to be loved, okay? And we expect others to love us in a way that is unconditional. But the biggest problem we have as human beings is that we want to be loved unconditionally, but none of us are able to love unconditionally. We all long to be loved and accepted in such a way that no what my merits portray or present, someone is still going to love me in my failures, in my weakness, and in my brokenness. Humanity, or secular love, as you might want to call it, is a love that is found with conditions. Human beings, our love is conditional love. I'll love you as long as it benefits me mostly. And generally speaking, withdraw it when it gets too hard or too costly. The Bible itself speaks a lot about love, particularly in the Old Testament, believe it or not. I mean, I read Psalm 136 this morning at Truros. Steadfast love of the Lord endures forever. It goes on with 26 verses. Steadfast love of the Lord endures forever. And the love of God in the Old Testament is found in a thing called hesed, or covenant love. So we come to the New Testament. Of course, we have the proposition that God is indeed love. And in love, Jesus laid down his life for us. Then in the application of that love, in John 13, when Jesus is wiping his disciples' feet before the cross, he says, "By this all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another." So as human beings, we are to be loved and to love. And as Christians particularly, we are to love in a way that is definitively Christian love and not secular love, but we fail at loving unconditionally. And so we need a model of love that is manifest for us, a model of love that we experience, and a model of love that we can act out as well. And I think this passage here in 2 Samuel 9 gives us a model of divine love, of God's love, that we can, I hope we can implement ourselves. Let me give you, start with an analogy that may help us to try to grasp this concept that I'm going to present to you today called hesed, or covenant love. Imagine you are in child and orphan care. You've moved from home to home. You are somewhat forgotten, unwanted. You are labeled as difficult or damaged. One day you are told that you are going to meet a family, and this family is going to consider adopting you. You dress up nervously. You're not sure what to expect. You walk into the room with your social worker, ready for another polite rejection. But instead of questions and assessments, the couple looks you in the eye and smiles and says, "We've already decided. We've chosen you. We've signed the papers. You are already our child. No assessment needed. Come home with us, and we'll dedicate our life to your well-being." This type of love is what the Bible would call divine or covenant love, or the Hebrew word is hesed. You've heard that before. And it's a type of love that we're going to see here in 2 Samuel, and ultimately how we're going to see that worked out in Jesus in the gospel and what it means for us here as a church. Because we want to move, I'm trying to help us to move from what we might call secular love, which is a love with strings attached, to a covenant love, which means God, I'm going to love you with an unbreakable promise. Because that covenant love is a type of love that God loves us with. A covenant love, commitment to the well-being of another person through an unbreakable promise. So let's look at 2 Samuel chapter 9. If you're visiting today, we've been working through 1 Samuel last year and 2 Samuel this year. We're at the stage where David is in Jerusalem. He's centralized the politics of Israel by being the capital. He's brought the Ark of the Covenant into Israel, so it's the center of worship. And for the next 8 or 9 so chapters, you're going to find David sitting in a courtroom. He's now in the courts of the king. And we're going to see something about how he operates as a king and see what he's like as a king. And so the passage begins with David asking a question of his servants. Let me read you that question. And David said, "Is there still anyone left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake?" So he starts with a question to those around him in the courts of the king. And he wants to find someone who's left over from the house of Saul. Now, remember, historically, the house of Saul was the first king. It was the house of Saul that tried to kill David. Okay? It is the house of Saul that God put judgment upon them. And God said, never shall any of your descendants be on the throne again. And so in one sense, when David asks if there's anyone left of Saul's line, it's unusual because he wants to show kindness to them. A hesed love. This is unusual because normally when a king comes to power, the first thing he does is tries to kill off all the descendants of the previous king. I don't know if there are any Game of Thrones fans out there. You might remember the, Season 3, Episode 9, The Red Wedding. Now, I haven't watched it. My brother's a big fan. I got onto ChatGPT to tell me the information on this one. Robb Stark, his mother Catelyn, and many of his men are slaughtered during a wedding feast at the hands of Lord, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it properly, Lord Walder Frey and Roose Bolton. Is that right? It's a calculated political move to eliminate the rival bloodline and secure power for the Lannisters, right? That's the way the kings normally operate. I know my brother, when he read this 20 years ago, when it first came out, he said, "Stephen, I can't believe how they killed half the characters in one scene. You know, it was just a demolishing of this bloodline." But that's how kings normally work. They assassinate the bloodline before them. Here in contrast, we're told that King David wants to show kindness to the house of Saul. And that's that word kindness is the word hesed, which is covenant love of God. It's the covenant love with an unbreakable promise. And what is unique about this hesed love is that it's unconditional. It comes from God and it's unbreakable. You see, what makes hesed covenant love unique is it only God has the character and the strength to follow through on it. You can stick your hand up and say, "I'm going to love you unconditionally." You will fail. But God does not fail. This is the beauty of our God. This is what makes him divine. He has a love that is unbreakable by promise. So it's no small thing when David said, "Is there anyone of Saul's household that I can show God's hesed," verse 3, it's God's hesed, "for the sake of Jonathan?" So David does that because he experienced God's hesed in chapter 7. He's promised Jonathan in chapter 20 of 1 Samuel. And he wants to show unconditional love to one who might seemingly be an enemy of the empire. So three times in this passage, David says, "I want to show hesed love." Well, there is someone who is a descendant of Saul, the son of Jonathan, and he has a grandson, has a son as well. So verse 3, Ziba said to the king, "There is still a son of Jonathan. He is crippled in his feet." The king said to him, "Where is he?" And Ziba said to the king, "He is in the house of Michah, son of Amiel of Lodabar." Then King David sent and brought him from the house of Michah, son of Amiel at Lodabar. Here we meet Ziba. We don't know who he is. We get a sense that he's, later we find he's a very rich man. We also get a sense which he's maybe a rebellion, because you get about 10 chapters later and he tries to set up against the king by using Mephibosheth. He doesn't, anyway, he's a shady character, put it that way. Okay? And he's told David that there is someone, and he's described not by name, but by character. House of Saul, son of Jonathan, crippled in his feet. Not only that, we're told that he lives in a place called Lodibar, which means no pasture, nowhere lands. So the crippled man from nowhere land comes to David, in verse 6. And Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and paid homage. And David said, Mephibosheth. And he said, Behold, your servant. And David said to him, Do not fear, for I will show you kindness, hesed, covenant love, for the sake of your father, Jonathan. And I will restore to you all the land of Saul, your father, and you shall eat at my table always. And he paid homage and said, What is your servant that you should show regard for a dead dog such as I am? Here in the first time in the narrative, we get to know this person's name, Mephibosheth. And as you said, the whole point of withdrawing his name is to make sure that we understand who he is in title. He is a crippled person, descendant of disgraced bloodline, living in exile. But now we come to know who he is. He falls on his face in homage. And at this point here, we hear David giving five significant statements that express his covenant love for Mephibosheth. And the first statement is simply a word, and that is to call him by his name, Mephibosheth. You've got to imagine he's the king, and they don't normally address people by their first name. They might call him servant or descendant of Saul. Instead, he calls him by his personal name, Mephibosheth. One might imagine going to the Saudi crown prince Mohammed bin Salman or any other sheikh of the Middle East and introducing yourself, and they say, G'day, Steve. You'd go, really? You'd get a sense of which you're being accepted, right? The same thing's happened here. Royalty is calling Mephibosheth, far out, by name. Can I just say M? Can I just say that? Or Meph? Anyway, calls him by name. It's a sign of acceptance. I know you. The next statement David says to him is, do not fear. Again, Mephibosheth would think that if he's coming to see the king, he's been summoned by the king, and new kings eliminate the old bloodline, he's got to be thinking, I'm going to lose my head. Don't fear. It's okay. These are bold statements. And then David finally says, I want to show you kindness. I want to show you hesed. This is bold. This is out there. This is radical. I know you. Do not fear, I'm going to show you covenant love. The next verse, David expresses what that covenant love might look like. Verse 7, David said to him, Do not fear, I will show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan, and I will restore to you all the land of Saul, your father, and you shall eat at my table always. Two things. David promises to restore the land of Saul, your father. And that language is the language of covenant, of promised Abraham, Mosaic law, promised land. David is going to restore that to you. Your grandfather Saul, he calls him his father, all that land I'm going to give back to you. I'm going to get all your these servants of mine, Ziba and his household, they're going to serve you as well. So you're going to have stacks of cash, stacks of land. And finally, David says, from now on, you're going to eat at my table. I'm going to adopt you as a child of the king. He makes a promise, a covenant promise, an unbreakable promise. For the rest of your life, Mephibosheth will eat at the table of the king. In fact, it's mentioned four times in this chapter, to eat at the table of the king. And that means in the ancient world, to eat at the table of the king is you are accepted into the inner circle. You are protected by the king's rule. You're in his safe place, you're in his refuge. And you have a change of status, you are now a child of the king. And note how it says there that Mephibosheth will eat at the king's table. How long for? Always. It's a covenant promise that will never be broken. It's a guarantee, the same way that God has guaranteed a promise to David. Unlike the Game of Thrones, this is not a setup, but a blessing, adopted. Well, how does Mephibosheth respond? Well, he pays homage. He says, who am I? Similar language to David in chapter 7. What am I? But he does accept all that David has promised him. He's received it. He's entered the household. He's humbled himself. He has faith and trust in the king. He submits to the king and receives his promise. The rest of the chapter is an outworking of that. Can you see how this picture here is so much like the gospel? The promise of Jesus in the gospel is you get acceptance. You get forgiveness of sins. You get acceptance through no merit of your own. You might be an enemy of the state, but you are in the family of God, not by your merit, but by God choosing you to commit himself through Hesed promise for your well-being. The promise of the gospel brings us eternal security without judgment, without being beheaded, so to speak. The riches of eternity, not the riches of land, but all the riches of being a child of God. Provision and ultimately adoption, that you can call God Father, a good, good Father. And there's other ways in which this passage leads us to the gospel. Particularly that very last line of the chapter. Do you notice? It's a bit like a loose end, isn't it? It's like a stray bit of string. Did you pick it up? The very last line? Now he was lame in both feet. It's like, why? What's that doing there? If not prophetically pointing us forward to a king to come. Because if you remember Isaiah, in the book of Isaiah, a number of times it says this, then the Messiah, the eyes of the blind shall be opened, the ears of the deaf unstopped, and the lame shall leap like a deer. And you get to Jesus' ministry. And what does he do? He heals the lame. He's telling us that the type of king David was, the greater king, is now here. The type of king that accepts a rebel and an enemy and a lame person and promises at the table is only foreshadowing the greater king who speaks about an eternal banquet. And in that eternal banquet, he says, there'll be invitations to the poor and the crippled and the lame and the blind because the religious won't come in. His Hesed love of David, which is in 2 Samuel 7, becomes the very model of the gospel in the coming of the true King Messiah Jesus. In this gospel, the unclean are welcomed, the outcasts are welcome, the blemished are treated as sons, those who have been tagged, damaged goods, are asked and invited to sit at the king's table. 2 Samuel 7 is simply a model of the gospel that is to come in Jesus. Then we use the word hesed, God's covenant love. We use the word gospel, God's promise to us in Jesus. Let me try and tie this together. I really want you to try and grasp the term of hesed love, because hesed love is bound in a covenant. It's a promise. It's a, commitment with an unbreakable promise. It's a personal commitment, no matter what the other person does. And I want you first and foremost to think of covenant in your relationship with God. In Christ, God has made a covenant with you, a hesed covenant, that's an unbreakable promise. Okay? It's unbreakable. If God says you are my child, you are my child. That's it. It's unbreakable. It is grace-filled. It is hesed love. And I want to use the Lord's Supper as an expression of that. Because in the Lord's Supper, what does it say? What does Jesus say? This cup is poured out for you is the new covenant in my blood. Okay? So when we come to the Lord's Supper, we're not saying I'm renewing my commitment to God. You're being reminded of God's covenant commitment to you. So you are secure in him, so that your fear is gone, that you can be comfortable at the king's table. You don't have to worry about being rejected. You are accepted and loved and forgiven and restored and reconciled and adopted. And you meet with the king. That's the Lord's Supper. That's the beauty of it. But not only that, when we break bread, we are having a covenant with one another. I don't know if you realize that. We are one body. We're one loaf. If you are here and we take the Lord's Supper and we break bread together, whether you know it or not, you are making a covenant headset commitment to one another. That's what we're doing. We are bound together in the gospel by the power of God's Spirit. And we are saying to one another, I'm going to love you with the covenant love which God has loved me. And this covenant love, we want to reject secular love, that conditional love. We want to say, I'm going to love you no matter what. And we start with our homes, of course, in our marriages. That's what covenant love is. It's why you get married for better or for worse. That's where that sort of covenant comes from. It actually comes from God's divine hesed love that we take and say, we're going to do that in marriage. But then it can be extended to any intimate relationship, that we love others because of God's overflowing love for us. I'll love you. But if your relationships are beginning to be filled with resentments, saturated with judgments, the bullets of insults, resulting in bitterness and frustrations, can I suggest you've forgotten hesed love. You've forgotten the love of God for you that you are to communicate to others. Church, if we can grasp covenant hesed love as the way in which we view our relationships by the power of God, this church will be filled with grace abundant, not treating the other as their sins deserve. But forgiveness is more easily found when it's bound in hesed love. If we live out hesed love, we can manifest the goodness of God amidst the chaos, the messiness, and the stupidity of our lives. Because we all fail, and we all will fail in loving and being loved. But we're going to come back and come back to the hesed love of God as the framework of our thinking. I'm going to finish with you this morning with a short story of a theologian called B.B. Warfield. He was an esteemed biblical theologian of Princeton Seminary, and he's really well known, still read today. But what's not so well known is his tale of his marriage, and this is, I think, an expression of covenant love. He was pursuing studies in Germany in 1876. While he's in Germany, it was also his honeymoon. So I don't know if he'd go into Bible college and honeymooning at the same time. It's not a great idea, I don't think. But that's what he did. Anyway, they were walking on a tour in Harz Mountains, and they were caught in this terrible storm, thunderstorm. And the experience was so shocking to his wife, Annie, that she never recovered. becoming more or less an invalid for the rest of her life. For B.B. Warfield, he never left her side for more than 2 hours at a time for the next 39 years. Went to seminary, did his lectures, and came back again and sat by her side for the next 39 years. When people observed them, they would say of him, they would note the gentleness of his manner was a striking proof of that hesed loving care with which he surrounded her. Let's learn to live in hesed covenant love that says, I'm going to show you grace when you least deserve it. Our hesed love that says, I'm not going to treat you as your sins deserve because I've made a binding covenant with you so you can rest assured. That sort of love brings incredible stability and security to all of your relationships.